So dominating component, and so the curvature really doesn't contribute, so I will not really consider it. So this is my density, and then a of eta, and then a of t. So once you solve for a of eta, you can of course return back to a of t by solving the relation between eta and t. So matter, we know that matter is characterized as galaxies and stuff like that by w equal to 0. And the density we showed yesterday goes like 1 over a cube. And we've shown in your tutorial that, well, in terms of t, it goes like 2/3, but in terms of eta, it goes like eta square. So a is proportional to eta square, as we see from the solution. So if w is equal to 0, then we have just alpha equals to 2. So sk, when k is equal to 0, is just that argument. So it's eta over alpha, 2 power 2. So it's eta square. Okay. So that's what happens in the matter-dominated era. Then you have radiation, which was more important in the early universe. Then the pressure is 1/3 of the energy density. And I showed you yesterday that rho is 1 over a to the 4. And again, if you plug w equal to 1/3, then you have 1 plus 1, so 2/3 here. But the whole thing, okay, so 2/3, is that true? 1. Okay, so eta, and then d to 1/2. And I told you that curvature doesn't really contribute, so we can neglect that. So really, it's the lambda, which is now important. And we know that lambda has very weird equation of state, where the pressure is minus the energy density. And the energy density actually remains constant. And if the energy density remains constant, eta behaves, it doesn't, well, okay. So eta now runs from minus infinity to 0, so this is still thing, positive. And in terms of t, there is an exponential growth. So e to ht, where h is your Hubble's constant. Okay, so you have exponential expansion of your universe if you have Desiderius space. So if you have lambda positive, and this is precisely the era where we are living now, as you will see in a minute. So this is what's happening when these, you know, each of the components here is dominating in the universe. Other questions? Okay, so which brings me to the current state or current model of our universe. So current cosmological model. And so it turns out that our universe seems to be extremely simple. It's very well described by only very, very few parameters, which we will get to know during this course. But that model is sometimes called, and this is already, we can understand a little bit, it's called lambda CDM model. So what it means is that we need a cosmological constant for its description, for the description of our universe. And we also need dark matter, and this C stands for cold dark matter. So as we will see next week, you know, there were other models, competing models with this, that maybe the dark matter actually, you know, is relativistic particles, so it means, you know, but they can be excluded. So what we really have is now that you can show that if the dark matter must be cold. Of course, there are alternatives to dark matter as well. So, for example, you can modify gravity theory. You can say the Einstein's gravity is only valid in small scales, and in large scales it has to be modified. But these theories have lots of problems as well. Okay, so it seems that most possible is really that it's called dark matter and lambda, and you need that for your description. So now, in terms of the current content of the universe, of you know, of these matter components, is that you can introduce omega I, so I standing for each component, so and this is the density of that component, and then divided by critical density. I remind you that the critical density is something which tells you that k is equal to zero, so that we live in the flat universe. So rho critical is given by 3a squared t over 8pi g newton, and it's precisely the density in order to have k equal to zero. So now you can measure basically the abundance of each component in terms of this rho critical. And so the present, the current matter content of the universe is that you observe omega matter, which is 0.32. So first of all, you basically observe that this is precisely one. That if you sum over all components, we are getting really flat universe. So omega matter out of this is 0.32, and you can split it into two parts. You can split it on into omega dark matter if you want, which is something like minus 0.5, 0.27, something like 27%, and then you can split it into normal baryons, which we know, and that's 0.05. Okay, so in some sense, all of particle physics which you know is just this teeny tiny 5% content of the universe, turns out. Okay, so that's matter. Then you can have also the radiation, omega radiation. So from this dependence of the density on the scale factor, it is clear that the radiation was probably much more important than A was smaller. So in the early universe, the radiation actually dominates, but now the radiation is completely negligible. And so the content of the universe of radiation in CMB is 9.4 times 10 to minus 5. Okay, so it's really teeny tiny energy density, if you want, contributing in the radiation. However, the universe is mostly filled with dark energy, and the simplest model for dark energy is just the cosmological constant, and it's something like almost 70% of this. And finally, this omega k, probably zero, but constrained to be less than 0.01, so less than 1%. So really, if you sum all these things up, you are getting that really, really half almost critical density up to some teeny tiny perturbation, which is this flatness puzzle. Okay. So that's the current matter content of the universe, and it's also useful to draw this diagram. You know what happened in the past. So on one axis you put logarithm of rho, and on the other axis you put the logarithm of the scale factor. And so if I take a logarithm of this thing, so again I'm playing with that density column here, you see that for the matter I have a slope minus 3, and for radiation I have minus 4, and for lambda I have a constant. Okay, so then this is what radiation does. radiation. Slope is minus 4. And this is what matter does. Slope is minus 3. And this is what lambda does. And slope is 0 here. Okay, so now it turns out that we live somewhere here. So this is us. And so we are just, you know, entered the era in some sense where the cosmological constant started dominating. And so we sort of started exponentially expanding the universe. So now, of course, whenever I talk about these epochs, I will say, you know, the epoch when the radiation is dominating is, you know, all the way down here. When the matter is dominating, it will be, you know, this part. And then this will be the lambda domination era now. Okay? So now, if you believe in inflation, then there's something again like lambda in the past, but the value of that lambda is much, much bigger than the value of lambda now. So you would have, again, a constant, but it would be something like this here, if you believe in inflation. Okay, so that would be that. So now let me just place two more important events in the history of the universe, which we will talk about next week. So one of them is the release of CMB, which appeared somewhere here. This is CMB release. And you see that it's already in the matter-dominated era. So this is matter era. This is lambda. And this is radiation. OK, so CMB was already, you know, released when matter started dominating the behavior of the universe. And then you also talk about Big Bang nucleosynthesis, how heavier elements were fused out of hydrogen, and that happened in the radiation era. So this was Big Bang nucleosynthesis, but we will look at the history in much more detail next week. Okay, but these are really the two very, very remarkable events which happened in the history. Okay, so now again, the flatness puzzle is why we are here. Let me just mention one more interesting principle, which, you know, keeps resurfacing from the early days till now, and that's called anthropic principle. And so, you know, people are puzzled by all these. There are all these puzzles, right? So why lambda is so small now? Why do we see the correlation between what happened there and what's happening here, and so on? So there are many, many puzzles, and they usually depend on fine tuning of some parameters, on fine tuning of some initial conditions, or something like that. So now the question is, why these conditions or these parameters are so fine tuned? And so, of course. Mainly people coming from particle physics, they try to explain things from fundamental principles. And so they would really like to find a principle which justifies, yes, the initial conditions had to be tuned so precisely because of this or because of that. Okay? But there is another approach, which is this anthropic principle approach. And people say, well, actually, if they haven't been tuned so precisely, actually, our universe would look completely different. And if our universe would look completely different, then actually there wouldn't be intelligent beings to observe that universe. So you can reverse the logic and you can say the presence of intelligent beings as us actually means that the initial conditions had to be such that the universe is as we observe it today. Okay, so that's sometimes like circular argument, but it's maybe not that stupid argument because maybe there is no actual explanation for why the initial conditions were so tuned. Maybe it's just, you know, some random thing which happened. And maybe there are many other universes which don't have, you know, that precise fine tuning of initial conditions. And then there are no intelligent beings to wonder why the conditions were so nicely tuned. Okay, so this is an interesting principle, and I think it's according to Penrose, but maybe many other people. So the universe looks like ours because we are here to observe it in some sense. We are here to observe it. In other words, if you really change the initial conditions a little bit, then you know there is no structure formation. The galaxies don't form. If the galaxies don't form, the life cannot exist. Okay, so that's a principle. For example, Weinberg likes this principle very much. But it's an alternative to trying to explain everything, right? Are there any questions here?
Is phenomenon to doing physics?
Not really. No. So. So it's basically I don't have to justify the values of these parameters, right? But once I know what these parameters are, I can do physics and I can do predictions, something, right? But it's basically saying I don't really have to justify why lambda is so small. It is simply so small because if it were bigger, we wouldn't have any galaxies. We wouldn't have any life. Okay, but yeah, in some sense.
It is because it is.
Yeah, well, whatever. Okay, if you don't, okay. Other questions? If not, then let me start chapter 2. And that will be about matter. And so the aim here will be really to look more closely on the content of the universe, on this Big Bang nucleosynthesis, what we really know, why we think there is Big Bang in the past, and so on. So really it's about matter. And to do this, I will need a technical tool, which is like a simplification of our life. It's a very crude approximation, but I'll use it anyway, so just to give you flavor of what's going on. And if you are interested in detailed calculations using Boltzmann equation and stuff like that, you can look it up in Muganov or in other books. So I will use the technical tool, which is a very, very simple one, and that's of thermodynamics. So part A, thermodynamics. In expanding universe. So basically, I will avoid doing serious statistical physics. I'll just cheat on you and do basically equilibrium thermodynamics if possible. Okay, so we sort of pretend that we do statistical physics. So we start from a distribution function. F, which will depend on x and p in the phase space. And I define it, just you can compare to what we have done in statistical physics, but basically the same thing. You can say that the distribution function, if you integrate it over some volume of the phase space, it gives you the number of particles in that phase space. Okay, so d and I, the number of particles, number particles in the given volume of the space, it's this d and I. So I stands for particles of different species, so I can consider protons and electrons and other things. And it's given by my distribution function, fi, in principle, it depends on time as well, txp, and then the volume element on the phase space, and then you can look up your statistical physics lectures where there's this, it's basically weighted by the volume element of the Planck. So it doesn't make sense to divide your phase space volume on units smaller than the Planck thing given by the Dahl-Center relation. Okay. So from now on, I will set h bar equal to 1. So I will just have 2 pi power cube. Okay. And so, once you know the distribution function, you can basically calculate everything. So let's see how you calculate everything which you need to know. So in particular, you can calculate the particle density. Particle density is given by an again of species I, and you just integrate this. So this will be a function of x, and you just integrate your distribution function over p. Okay, so these three p, 2 pi, q, and fi.
This is based on our three-dimensional time space-like slices, in which we foliate the whole.
Okay, so that's the particle density. Then you can talk about the energy density. Energy density rho I. So it will be the same thing, but now you just weight the integral by the energy of the appropriate particle. So again, it's an integral d3p 2 pi cube, and then e of the particle, and then fi, t, x, and p. Okay. I just weight that by the energy of the corresponding particle. And finally, you can talk about pressure. And pi. And so there is some strange factor, 1/3 the momentum square divided by e, which I don't know if you have done some derivation on high school, how the ideal gas when you know it hits the walls of a box, how what pressure it produces. And it's basically the momentum exchange, which it depends on p square, and you have three possible directions the particles can go. So that's why you take only 1/3 of them. And this is the origin of that. So d3p, 2 pi cube. And now this is p square. There's this 1/3 coming from, you know, the direction, three dimensions. And then e fi. So look up your notes from the high school. And if you do, you can actually just copy them down to your homework, because I assign you this as a homework, just to show that. Or convince yourself better. Better convince yourself, not really show that rigorously. I personally never believe that argument. But yeah, convince yourself that this is the pressure.
Can we also use the W equals 1/3?
In some sense, yes. Yes. For radiation, for relativistic particles, yes. For relativistic particles.
Or should we assume whether the particles are relativistic?
Yeah, exactly. So you have to split the discussion into the case when they are relativistic and when they are non-relativistic. For relativistic, you should find that basically the pressure is 1/3 of the density. For non-relativistic, you will find that the pressure is basically negligible. I will show that in a minute here. Okay, so here I am not assuming anything. I'm just, you know, working through this thermodynamics argument. And so once you know the distribution function, this is how you calculate anything you want. Okay. So now, how to find this distribution function? So how you find fi? So that's the key issue. And of course, in principle, this is very complicated. And so in general, this is governed by the most sneaky kinetic equation in statistical physics, which is Boltzmann equation. So Fi is governed by Boltzmann equation. So there are many other kinetic equations in statistical physics, but one of them, in some sense, most general one, is the Boltzmann equation. And I'll tell you why it's most general. So what it tells you is basically, it's like Liouville's theorem. So dFi over dt would be zero if there were no collisions. dFi over dt, which you can split into the explicit dFi over dt plus dFi dxj, xj dot, plus dFi dpj, pj dot. And so this would, if we had just the Hamiltonian mechanics, this would be equal to zero. It's the Liouville's theorem. Okay? But in general, you can put something, if you have some non-elastic collisions between the particles and some dissipation and something really, very dirty, you can put these terms on the right-hand side. So what people do is that we put collision term, which can, in principle, depend on this f as well. Okay, so this is the Boltzmann equation in its full generality. And as I say, to justify, the left-hand side is very simple. It's like Liouville's theorem, Hamiltonian mechanics, everything is very, very simple. But you hide all the dirty physics in this collision term here. So this is hiding dirty physics. And because the Boltzmann equation, of course, doesn't tell you what this collision term is, it's the most general thing you can ever write down, right? Because I simply hide there anything, okay? So you can specify, there are separate various ansatzes for what this right-hand side can be. And it's usually something like delta F or whatever. You can use these approximations to actually, you know, close the system and calculate anything. And I don't know, maybe you'll do it as a homework or something like that, just as an example that you can actually solve Fi correct, more precisely than we are going to do it here. But in principle, really, you have to specify what is the right-hand side. You have to close the system, and then you can solve for F. Once you know F, you just plug it here. Okay? So this is what people do. And that's what people do really for a living. So they write numeric codes, and they postulate what the right-hand side should look like, and then they solve these numeric codes, and then they compare with what is observed, and yeah, you can do that. Okay? So instead, I'm going to do something very, very simple. I'm going to tell you what this Fi is for us. So instead, we consider, and of course, you have some time evolution here, so that means that F is actually not in equilibrium, right? So you have some non-equilibrium processes for one particle species turning to another particle species and so on. So it's a quite complicated problem here. So instead, we consider so-called local thermal equilibrium. So we basically say, this F is F of equilibrium thermodynamics or equilibrium statistical physics. Okay? So, of course, there is a limitation to that, and you cannot always use that approximation. But there is a very simple criterion when you can use that approximation. And that's basically when I have some reaction, and the reaction rate is gamma. And so you can show, so reaction rate is, you know, how many events occur per time or whatever. So now if I take inverse of that, it has units of time. And so you define this to be a collision time. Collision time. Okay, so, and so if this collision time is much, much smaller than actually the time when the universe takes to expand significantly or do something significantly, you have sort of local thermodynamic equilibrium. Okay, so if this is much smaller, then the expansion time of the universe which of course is given by 1 over h, where h is your Hubble constant. So remember, h is a dot over a, so it has units 1 over dt, or 1 over t. If I take 1 over h, it has units of t. Okay? So now I can really compare these two times. I can see, you know, this is basically the time it takes for the universe to do something non-trivial, to expand non-trivially, to do something. And this is the time it actually takes the collision. Okay? So if this is true, then the universe, so I have lots of interactions here, and the universe is sort of not really expanding, so it's sort of like an equilibrium situation. So that's the condition for that. And so provided this is satisfied, and it will be satisfied for most of the calculations, actually, you can a posteriori do this horrible thing here, and then compare with this equilibrium approach. And apart from some factors, it actually works very well. Okay, so then you take just the equilibrium, or just the statistical thing which you know, and it's just the Dirac distribution, Fermi-Dirac distribution, or Bose-Einstein distribution. So Fi is given by E minus the chemical potential, T, and then plus minus 1, where the minus thing is for bosons, I never know, and the plus thing is for fermions. So we are saying if we have this local thermoequilibrium, we just sort of pretend we have equilibrium statistical physics, and we know what this distribution function is, and it's given by Fermi-Dirac statistics or Bose-Einstein.
So this hypothesis pretty good due to inflation?
In inflation, so in inflation, the universe is expanding like crazy.
Yeah.
So, but it also depends on the reaction rate. Yeah.
Okay.
So. In general, you would say that, you know, the more crazy the scale factor behaves, you know, less this will be satisfied, of course. Yeah.
Less would be satisfied.
You wouldn't be in equilibrium, right? Because now you're expanding like crazy.
But isn't that we need that the collision time is much, much less than the expansion time? Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. So that's our setup. So now we know that we have these relativistic particles. In principle, at least EI, it also depends on the species. So now EI is just given by the relativistic formula. So it's just P square plus MI square. Okay. So now it's obvious that this distribution, which is function of x, p, and time, well, not really time because we are in equilibrium now. We are postulating that we are in equilibrium. But it's also, so you can turn that from x and p to, it depends only on p square, okay? So when you are integrating various things, so for example, when you are calculating the density, you are integrating over the momenta. And you can change that integral from momenta to the integral over the energies, because everything is sort of spherically symmetric in that momentum space. Okay, so if this is true, then you can change d3p to d omega p square dp. Okay, this is a spatial momentum, of course. But using this formula here, you can actually turn that to an integration over energies, right? Because everything depends only on the energy. Okay, so d omega, now p square is e square minus m square. That's e square minus m square. Okay, and then we have dp. And so p is square root of this thing, so I will get a square root when I differentiate that, minus m square, and then e dE. Okay? So in other words, this is very simple, that d3p is just d omega e dE, and then square root of e squared minus m squared. Okay, so well, it's not well. I'll get here. So with all these assumptions of thermal local thermal equilibrium, we can calculate, for example, what the particle density and what the energy density and what the pressures are using this simplification. And you will do it in your homework. But let me just give you a few ideas and a few steps. So for example, then, for example, the energy density in I is, okay, so the formula was 1 over 2 pi cube, 1 over 2 pi cube, and then was the integral over d3p, which I can replace by this integral over d omega dE e e square minus m square. Okay, and then you have d3x. And then there is your distribution, and distribution is the Fermi-Dirac or Bose-Einstein distribution. So it's e to e minus mu I t, and then minus plus 1. Okay, so this is your density. Now, of course, you can perform this integral over the omega, which is the integral over the momenta angular part, and that gives you 4 pi. Okay, so I can get rid of this and put 4 pi here. And so this prefactor has becomes 1 over 2 pi square. And so this is your formula, for example, for the particle density in this equilibrium. Okay, so now let's so in general, to calculate this is quite complicated. So let us consider two special cases, which are, of course, the cases of interest. When you have particles which are relativistic, and when you have particles which are non-relativistic. Okay, these are the two special cases. So let's calculate this first in the relativistic regime, which is simpler, actually. So relativistic. And by relativistic regime, I mean that actually the temperature is much bigger than the mass and the chemical potential here. So if the temperature is much bigger, so in basically all the energy is in the kinetic energy, not in the potential energy of the particle, you can everywhere neglect the mass, which is like the rest energy, the potential energy here. Okay? So this Ni, then it's 1 over 2 pi square, and then your energy, well, the mass is basically 0, so you can integrate from 0 to infinity, and then neglecting the mass in the denominator, I just have E here, so I'll have E square dE. E squared dE, and then I'm neglecting the chemical potential in the denominator, so I'll have just E over T, and then minus plus 1. Okay? Well, basically setting mu I and mi everywhere equal to 0. Okay? So now this is very simple to calculate. You just introduce new variable, you call this guy X. So X is E over T, which means that dE is T dx. Okay, so Each e is proportional to t, so I'll have t squared from here and another t from here. So I'm picking up a factor in front of the integer, which should be t cubed. Okay, so this is equal to, I continue my equality here, so it's t cubed 2 pi square integral, and then I will have x square dx, and then e to the x minus plus 1. And this is from 0 to infinity. So now this is we are done. So that is, of course, some number, the integral. And the number to turns out to be the special function, which I don't know how to write, is the zeta function. So this is equal to, okay, so let's write the integral. So the integral is either, if you have minus or plus, it's different. So it's 2, oh no, zeta, I don't know how to write it, zeta 3 for bosons, and it's 3 halves zeta 3 for fermions. So that's the value of the integral. It's simply some number, right? And so you calculated what the energy density here is in the relativistic regime. So it's some number, which is not that important, but what is important is equal to t cubed. Okay, so we conclude here is that an I is proportional to ti cubed. Okay. So higher temperature means higher density here. And the prefactor is different for bosons and for fermions. Okay, so that was the calculation, which was pretty much complicated, not really. But the important lesson from here is that n is proportional to t cubed. Okay, so now, of course, this would simply follow by a dimensional argument. And so you know that the density is, well, the number of particles divided by volume. So it's divided by length cube. And if you want to measure that in energies or temperatures, then 1 over length has units of energy. Okay, if you are setting h bar equal to 0 and whatever, c equal to 0 and stuff like that, then 1 over length has units of energy. So you know that the particle density has to have units of energy cube, in other words, t cube. Okay, so similarly, you can say that the energy density, which now is energy per volume, so now there is extra energy in it, so it must be t to the 4. Okay, ti to the 4. And finally, the pressure must be, well, it has units of energy density as well, so it must be ti to the 4. Okay, so bi-dimensional argument. So now you may say, well, this is not true, right? Because the temperature is not the only quantity which has units of energy, right? But remember that we are in relativistic regime. So there are other quantities which have units of energy, like the mass or the chemical potential or all these things. But in the relativistic regime, I'm imposing that all these are basically zero. So the only thing which is left and has units of energy is the temperature. And that's why it must be like that. Okay? So that's it. You will calculate the precise coefficients standing here in your homework. Okay? So now you may be worrying about, was this question about the student is gone. So anyway, so now you can calculate what is this VI, which is PI over rho I. And so if you actually calculate precisely what these coefficients are there, so as you will do in your homework, so when you calculate what the number is here and what the number is there, then you find that this is precisely equal to 1 over 3. So in some sense, this is a confirmation that any relativistic particle, not necessarily electromagnetic radiation, but any relativistic particle will have equation of state with W equal to 1/3. Okay. I have 5 minutes. So maybe we can still do non-relativistic, and there is some dirty trick here. Okay, are there any questions to relativistic regime? So now to get a non-relativistic regime, there is a dirty trick, which you may not believe me, it's correct, but actually it is correct, but I don't really have justification for it. So let's see how it goes. And you know, if you are still puzzled about this, ask the guy who taught you statistical physics. Okay. But not me. Okay, so second regime is the non-relativistic. And so what I mean by that is that the temperature is now much smaller than the mass. And also that the chemical potential is smaller than the mass. So you know that for classical gases or whatever, the chemical potential is hugely negative. So this is satisfied. Okay. So now our particle density is still 1 over 2 pi square. And then the integral, so which we are looking at that formula over there. So now the energy actually, because it's non-relativistic, well, we go from m to infinity. And then we have this dE and the square root, e square minus mi square. But the assumption is that you can neglect that plus minus 1 in the denominator. So you have e to e minus ui over t. Okay. So just neglecting this plus minus 1 denominator of that thing. And you're assuming that this is much bigger than plus minus 1. OK. So now the data trick is to introduce a new variable, if you want. And this variable, it seems that it would be logical to say this new variable is e minus mu I over t. But actually, that's not the correct thing to do, because that would kill the dependence on the chemical potential in some sense. So what better you do is that you introduce new variable, let's call it u, which is e minus the mass divided by t. So it's not the chemical potential, but it's the mass there. And you will treat this parameter as small parameter. So in some sense, if you are in non-relativistic regime, you assume that this is really, really small. But of course, this is also small. So anyway, what you have to assume is that this guy is much smaller than that guy. Okay. So now if I do this, then you have E is T times U plus MI. Okay. So now if you plug it everywhere, so we have 1 over 2 pi square. 2 pi square. And then an integral from 0 to infinity. So now dE is, of course, d du. E is whatever is here, tu plus mi. And then you have e square. So e square is t square u square. E square u square plus 2 tu mi. And then plus mi square and minus mi square. So that's it. And then here you have, so this is written as e minus mi and plus mi. So this is written as e to power u. That's minus mi. And then we have e to, So now we have minus mi So we have got also plus mi. So it's mi minus mu I over t, something like that. Yes?
So, Peter, I was wondering, since we are in the non-relativistic medium, why are we not using e equals p squared by 2m? And
e equals to p squared by 2m. Well, this is the total energy. So you could say it's p squared over 2m plus m or something like that. Yeah, I could say that. Yes. OK, so anyway, so the trick now is to treat u as a small quantity, which means that you only keep the dominant term in terms of u in the denominator. OK, that means I kill this guy, I kill that guy. OK, so this is equal to, I knew that there's not enough time, t over 2 pi square, and then integral du, and over there I have 2t u mi, and then e to minus u, and then you can take that exponential in front of this, so it's e mu I minus mi over t here. Okay, so now of course I can take this square root of 2t mi as well. So it's t, okay. So it should be mi t to the power 3/2, and then 2 pi square, and then e mu I minus mi over t, and then integral to u e minus u du. Okay, hopefully it is. I'm missing somewhere I. This. Oh, that should be mi as well. Yeah. Okay. So now it's correct. Okay. So now, of course, again, this guy is a number which you can calculate exactly, but it's, you know, some number. And so what you concluded is that now the particle density is proportional to this factor, which depends on the temperature. So it's like behaves like t to 3/2. So this is proportional to t to 3/2, which is not that important. But what is really important is that if you fix the potential, then it behaves like mi over t. Okay. So you see that there is a very, very weird feature of thermodynamics. The thermodynamics actually hates massive particles. Okay. So if whenever you have non-trivial mass, actually the particle number or particle density is suppressed exponentially by this mi over t. So you can interpret that as thermodynamics hates massive particles. And so basically, you know, whenever the particle is no longer relativistic, it doesn't exist because you know, it's exponentially suppressed. Okay, if it stays in equilibrium, so this is true if you are in equilibrium. If you are in equilibrium, these particles basically do not exist.
So thermodynamics hates massive particles, or thermodynamics hates dirty tricks.
No. So, okay. which tricks are you referring to? So what I'm doing here is the expansion in small u. And I haven't justified that. And I don't really know how to justify that. Because, of course, both things are small. Right? So
yeah.
This guy is small. And that guy is also small. But yeah. So in that sense, I don't know how to justify that. But what is important is that this is really something which you know is true for non-relativistic gases or whatever. So this is true, and yeah, it's true. You just have to believe me. But you know, if it's true, that means that thermodynamics hates massive particles. So something happened, you know, in the childhood of thermodynamics, and you know, it started hating massive particles, and it hates them so much that it basically kills them. So I'll continue from here next week. Other questions?